I spread a song so you can sing along with my special guest or two.
Or two.
You like to sing and dance, and this podcast, by chance, explores musicals for you. Theme song, yeah.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Life's But a Song, a podcast that likes to live in the land of musicals. I'm your host, John, and with me today is my bestie, Shady.
Yay!
My bestie, that's Shady. Me. How you doing, Shady?
I'm doing wonderful. How are you?
Doing great.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we're here today to talk about the 2024 film, Better Man. The screenplay is by Simon Gleason, Oliver Cole, and Michael Gracie, based on the life story by Robbie Williams, directed by Michael Gracie, and according to IMDb, the meteoric rise, dramatic fall, and remarkable resurgence of British pop star Robbie Williams. That's it.
Yeah. No mention of the chimpanzee in the room.
That's
so
it.
You might go into this movie having only read the IMDb summary and being like, oh, I did not realize this man was a chimpanzee.
Oh, I didn't know there was a talking chimpanzee that can outdance everybody.
Yeah, I feel like I would have heard that even off the Isle of Great Britain.
Which I have to say, doing it like this was so smart. So this way you don't have to worry about casting lookalikes for the younger versions.
Right? And like, honestly, I might be alone in this. For a good chunk of the movie, like, I just find myself ignoring the fact that he's a chimpanzee. I'm like, well, yes, that's what Robbie Williams looks like.
Well, so let's step back for a hot second. Are you a fan of Robbie Williams?
Or no.
Okay.
No. One of the few Americans I know who has heard of Robbie Williams before, and I've heard a few of his songs, and I've been like, okay, this is fine. I can see why this is not big in America, but I can also see why it's big in other parts of the world.
See, I remember Robbie Williams when he came out with that song Millennium.
I remember that. And then
I've seen a lot of clips from the Graham Norton show that he's on.
Yes. I mostly know him from, he did a song for the original Bridget Jones movie. He did the end credits song, which I thought was fun. And yeah, Graham Norton.
Yeah. And
he's a great Graham Norton guest.
And then watching this, when some of the songs happen, I was like, oh, I do know this song. Like Rock DJ, which is like, yeah, the one that everybody knows. Relight My Fire, which I was like, oh, I know this one. I don't know how I know it. But then when he covers Land of a Thousand Dances, he only covered it for this movie, I found. I thought that this was a song he covered on an album or something.
Yeah, nope. I thought it might have been a previous cover.
Nope, only this one.
Interesting. Great choice of song.
So then to go back to take a step forward back into talking about the chimpanzee of it all. Is it because he was like the party guy, the fun guy, and Take That?
So I've heard two versions via quotes, like interview quotes. The one from Michael Gracie is that he wanted it to be a chimpanzee because when you see him do coke and like crash out on people, he was like, if you see an adult man do that, you don't feel bad for him. But when you see a chimpanzee do that, you're like, oh, I feel bad for him. So like, according to him, it was partly to maintain a sympathy for him. But according to Robbie Williams, it's very much that he sees sort of what you said. I think his quote was like, I see myself as less evolved than other people. Basically saying, yes, he's a party animal, but also like to the detriment of himself and people around him.
And see, I thought that it was part of his Take That boy band persona character.
Yeah, it makes sense.
And then evolved into him being a party animal in life, because he talks about the drugs and the drinking and the downward spiral of it all. So, but also, it's a cool tool that you don't have to worry about casting lookalikes for child Robbie or teenage Robbie.
And you have, you know, actors providing the vocal performance, but you can also mix in the real Robbie Williams's voice with that performance as well.
Mm-hmm.
Which and is cool, because then you have Robbie Williams playing himself, but also not Robbie Williams playing himself.
But it was really fascinating watching it, because like they're clearly wearing costumes and other things like that, as well as the mocap or green screen suit or whatever technology they used. So like in, which is the one that they had to shut down the streets in London?
Rock DJ.
It was Rock DJ. Yeah. So like when they do the, which by the way, originally they were going to film it and then the fucking Queen of England died. How dare she?
What a whore.
What a bitch.
So what a cunt.
So they had to.
You're allowed to say that. She's British. She's British. It's polite to say that.
And so they had to like reschedule it. And so like, cause you know, you've been to London before. Yes.
Yeah.
That street is basically like, for those of you who've seen the movie but don't really understand, it's like Times Square, where it's very busy, very populated. All like the tourists are there, the shops are there and everything. So for them to actually film on location, because I mean, they could have built it, but like it wouldn't have been the same.
Yeah. I remember even hearing, I think it was Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban. Not to bring that into this, but when they filmed that movie, when they filmed that movie, they shut down the same streets and they had to do it at midnight. And I remember hearing what a huge deal it was that they did that. And that was Harry Potter. And that was not the first one. That was when it was like well established to be a big franchise.
Right.
So like if it was a big deal to do that for that.
Right. For this.
To do it for a guy who most Americans have never heard of. I mean, let's be honest. We're going to have a very American centric view on this. I know. I'm stopping the comments. I know how big he is in the rest of the world.
Stopping the comments.
I know he's huge. I know he's one of the his popularity in most of the Commonwealth rivals that of the Beatles. Americans don't know him. We don't know him.
Right. I now care
very much about him, but I did not care about him before. So it's funny that this movie that was destined to not do well in a very large film watching market got that same benefit that Harry Potter got.
And they used it. Like that was I rewound and had to rewatch that sequence, because I was like, this is amazing. It's one of the few musical-y moments. Like this, like,
yeah.
Like the fantastical musical moment. I mean, granted, our lead is a chimpanzee, so
but like again, half the time you barely notice,
right? But then and then a lot of the other songs that happen are very performative.
Mm-hmm.
But this is one of the few that it's, you know, set in musical theater land where everybody's singing and dancing and they know the choreography.
Right. And like, we're condensing a long period of time into just this one song, because we're
doing a montage. Yeah.
Right.
And a lot of their costumes are Easter eggs for the costumes that they wore that wore throughout their career. Relight My Fire, like those plaid costumes are real, like they actually wore those.
Yeah,
which I think it's funny that there's one of the members, I don't remember who, it's not Gary Barlow, it's another one,
right,
who is like, you're making us look like a fool, and he's like, this is when they do the costume change and he's wearing like a devil costume or something, and you're like, girl.
Is that the one where he's in the chaps?
Yeah, it's like, girl, look at yourself. Like, I get it. That's the joke and everything. But like,
Right.
come on. You
It's
can't
so
seriously
good.
say you're making us look like a fool while wearing a weird costume like that.
So good.
So, okay. I also didn't really know Robbie Williams. Like I said, I only knew Millennium and a couple, and apparently I knew some of the songs without realizing it's Take That or Robbie Williams.
That's actually that happened to me with All Saints. They mention All Saints, and I was like, that kind of sounds familiar, but I don't know. And then they played their song Never Ever, and I was like, oh fuck, I remember this song, and I remember being obsessed with this song with some of my friends in middle school.
Which, when they did, okay, so I also forgot that Michael Gracey directed The Greatest Showman. So when they did She's the One and they're flailing around dancing and everything, I was like, oh right, that's this is that guy, 'cause that's A Million Dreams, where the body doubles of Hugh Jackman and Michelle Williams are throwing themselves at each other on the
Yes.
rooftop.
Remember I watched that movie exactly once. And all I remember about that scene is they kept having to have them run behind the sheets in the laundry sheets being hung out to dry so that you wouldn't see that it was body doubles.
And the fact that they're in silhouette the whole time. Yeah. But in this
Yeah.
one, he's like, fuck you, everyone. Well lit, gold, CGI chimp.
Yeah. And I want to shout out John O'Davies is the performer who played Robbie Williams in the mocap
The
suit.
older Robbie
Yeah, yeah,
Williams.
yeah. Not baby Robbie
Not
Williams.
baby Robbie Williams. Because I think they actually hired a child for that one.
Yes.
And back to She's the One. It's so fascinating that they used yet another song for like a 2 year montage, because we're in the present of them falling in love, and then we're seeing like their relationship failing and everything, where they who the three writers, Simon Gleason, Oliver Cole, and Michael Gracey, like, not only did they, I guess, talk to Robbie, but they absorbed everyone involved, like biographies or interviews or things like that, because what's her name?
Nicole Appleton is the
Nicole
singer.
Appleton.
Rachel Bano is the actress who played her. Or
Nicole
Rochelle?
Appleton.
Rachel? She spells it a way that I'm not used to. I don't know if it's Rachel or Rochelle.
Well, Nicole Appleton mentioned in her biography or memoir or something that like she did get an abortion because of her producer, and it was Robbie's baby. So like the little details here and there, I know.
Sorry, that I thought it's kind of cheesy, but in a way that's still effective because it is a musical and it's still heightened. But like showing that wordlessly that she got the abortion and it was not fully her choice to do that. And then also that this leads to the part where I felt the most like, fuck you, Robbie, but also, wow, what a brave man for putting this into a movie and admitting it to the world when he's, high and drunk later and throws that back in her face.
Yes.
Oh man, I was like seeing red when he did that. In a way, and it's good that that's what these kinds of movies should do. They should explore the really ugly sides of addiction, because that's ultimately what this is. This is a story about addiction. And how yes, you feel it's a sickness and you should have sympathy for the people who go through it, but also it's really hard on the people they love. And it gets so ugly. And I really appreciated that he was able to put that into this movie and not absolve himself of having done something really horrible to a person, a woman that he loved.
Right, 'cause everyone in this movie doesn't come off good or nice or
Yeah.
sweet or anything like that.
Nicole's probably the one who comes off the best, honestly.
Right, 'cause the members of Take That, I mean, I'm intrigued to be like, "Hey, Gary Barlow,
So
what did you think of your portrayal in this movie?"
I have asked since seeing this movie, I have asked a couple of British friends of mine what they think of Gary Barlow, and at least among them, the answer has unanimously been like, fuck Gary Barlow.
Oh, because of this movie or just because of.
I think because of real life, I don't know that. I mean, like 12 people saw this movie. And two of them were me, because I saw it twice.
I purposefully did not see it in theaters because I knew somebody was going to pick it. And so I didn't want to form an opinion, talk about it with others, and then come on out here and be like, okay, well, this is not just my unadulterated thoughts.
You wanted
Unfiltered hot thoughts.
that fresh virgin
Yeah.
viewing experience.
Yeah. So, like, when, for example, when they sang Come Undone, this is after he gets kicked out of Take That, I believe. That felt as well like a hard moment that I was just like, I wonder how Robbie felt reliving this. At least, you know, whether he was on set or he was there when they were editing it, or you know, even when they were talking about what moments of his life to put in, like that was rough. But oh my God, was it beautiful!
It's again, that's a moment. None of them come off good, honestly, because none of them handled this situation the right way. I think it was objectively probably the right thing to kick him out of the band because it was not healthy for him. It
Of
was more
course.
so the way they went about it was horrible and not supportive. Also, it was the 90s though, so like what did people know about therapy back then?
I mean, as well as he even knew that it was going to happen. So
Yeah, it was very much a long time coming type of.
I did love, like, he took the watermelon, and then when he was doing his 12 steps, kind of like the apolog going around apologizing, he apologized to Gary Barlow by like right carving a watermelon that says sorry. Do you want to know what I did not expect while watching this movie? For me to ugly cry.
Oh
Yeah.
my God, right? Okay, so I saw
Twice.
this, right? I saw
I
this
ugly
movie
cried
because,
twice.
right. I'm gonna be totally honest. I was not like thrilled to go see. I was not like dying to go see this movie. I saw it because I had a free ticket at Cinemark that was gonna expire at the end of the month, and I was like, sure, why not? I've heard that movie's better than it looks. But I went into it being like, I don't care about this guy. It's a chimp. Like the main draw for like a musician biopic like this is to see a really great performance from an actor. So like you don't see like Elvis because you really want to see the movie about Elvis's life. You want to see Austin Butler's performance of Elvis. And they kind of take that away by having the chimpanzee, although I still think John O'Davies did a great job. But like they kind of take that appeal away from it. It's a guy who's still alive, which is always like, why are we watching this?
And
I mean,
a lot of the stuff that is happening in this movie, it's not original by any means.
oh no, not at all. This is what every musician biopic is.
Yeah.
This is actually so similar in so many ways to Rocket Man, which is another
I
musician
was gonna
biopic that
bring that up.
I really love that movie and did not expect to love it. But this, at least that one, I was like, well, I really like Taron Egerton and I also love Elton John. This, it was like, okay, I don't know this CGI chimpanzee. I don't know him. He seems lovely. Good for him. And I also don't really know Robbie Williams, but I went to see it because I had the free ticket and I went with my mom because she also had a free ticket. And we were like, there's nothing we want to see. Let's go see this movie. Halfway through the movie, my mom told me beforehand, she was like, I expect to fall asleep during this movie. I'm mostly going to take a nap. And like halfway through the movie, my mom just looks at me, tears in her in, down her face, going, this is a really great movie.
What do you remember what scene that was?
It was the funeral.
Thank you. Okay. I was making noises, ugly crying. Yeah. And then at the end when he sings My Way without the dad, because fuck the dad.
Fuck the dad.
Fuck the dad. And he's singing "I Did It My Way," which is kind of like a meta thing where you're like, okay, Robbie, we see you, that you're doing this movie your way, you know.
Yeah.
But still, I'm crying.
The part that really got to me was at the Nebworth scene when he's fighting all the past versions of himself,
Oh my God.
and he stabs the baby version of himself, the little kid version.
The Pirates of
And
Penzance version?
yeah, and then it shifts into him having slit his own wrists in the quote unquote reality of the movie. That was the part that really got to me. I was stunned, stunned that they did that way and that beautifully.
Like, it was. It's so well done, and I wasn't expecting, because Better Man, I saw the trailer, so I was like, okay, like I said, I knew somebody was gonna pick it. Hello.
Hey.
Didn't know it was you, but I knew somebody was going to at some point. That's the thing with like musicals that are coming out these days, where I'm just like, do I want to watch them or do I want to just wait? And like
Yeah.
every once in a while I'll wait, but like Wicked, come
I
on.
mean that it's wicked.
It's wicked. I had to see that. But this one, I was just like, I could wait for this. And we didn't wait that long for it, but still, it was very well done for being a stereotypical biopic, musician
Yeah.
biopic.
Not to be the guy who talks about Walk Hard, the Dewey Cox story, every time you talk about any musician biopic. It is that though, that's what they all are.
I haven't seen
There's
Walk Hard. Nobody's picked it yet, so.
I'm not gonna
Oh.
do a biopic and then a biopic parody back to back. Am I gonna do that? Am I
We'll
gonna
talk. We'll
do
talk. We'll
that?
talk. We'll talk. We'll talk.
But yeah, part of why that movie is so funny is because it is exactly true. It is beat for beat. That's what they all are. They all, because what musician has an interesting life if the life isn't addiction and falling hard and then magically through the genius of your music? Although that's one thing I do really like about this movie is it doesn't try to make the claim that Robbie Williams is like this incredible musical genius.
No.
I like that he kind of has to work hard for it. He has to work hard to make himself like a decent songwriter. He can sing. The man can sing.
And according to the movie, he can dance. Or
Right.
he could dance at one point. Who knows
Right.
if like present day Robbie Williams can after all the drugs and
Right, right,
everything.
right. And middle age and having children and
Right.
not that he birthed them, but he
But
was there.
still, he was there. He had to raise them, and
Right.
he, let's see. I want to see how his age really quick. Sorry.
No, you're fine.
He is 51. Okay.
Okay.
And he could still get it. Although
Yeah,
there was a moment
100%.
there was a moment before the movie started that I was just like, are they going to CGI tattoos on the CGI chimpanzee? And because like I said, I know him from recent years when he's been on Graham Norton, and you can see like tattoos all over him. And sure
Yeah.
as shit, they did.
But yeah, I really I loved also when they got to the point where in his real life he had bleached hair. They bleached all of the chimpanzee's hair.
I
That
honestly loved
was
the
so
hair
good.
for the monkey, for the chimpanzee. Like
Yeah.
it had a little boy haircut when it was a little when he was a little boy. He
Oh my
went through
God,
like
what
a
an adorable little boy chimpanzee.
he went through a curly haired phase. He did the blonde. He shaved his head. I feel like he had a mohawk at one point, or
Yeah.
spiky hair, something like that.
I liked that you do, even though you don't see the context of the actual Rock DJ music video where he ends up as like a muscle man with all his skin torn off. They still had the chimpanzee with his skin torn off in there. That was great. That was great and not at all terrifying.
No,
But yeah,
not at all.
but going back to my previous point, like I did like that in so many of these movies. That's like the big thing at the beginning is like they have this great epiphany moment where they're like, oh, I just connect so much with music, and then I'm like tuned into it, and I'm just like a natural genius at this. And like, I'm not saying that those people that those movies are about aren't natural musical geniuses. I am saying that I really appreciated that this was a movie that was about a guy who succeeded through pure gumption and pure charisma.
Who
Like,
does
he did
have
it.
talent?
Yes, he's very talented. He is a talented guy. I think he's a pretty good songwriter. I don't think he's a fantastic songwriter, but I think he's pretty good. There are some lines that I'm like, that's a good lyric right there. I think he's a great singer. Not the best singer in the world, but I think he's a great singer. But the man has fucking stage presence. His true
Yeah.
gift is his stage presence. That's his real talent.
Which he didn't, so he didn't write a lot of these songs. When we meet Gary, Guy Chambers, though, that's when it's like only their songs. If you, I'm looking at the list. The fascinating thing is that even though we do hear some Take That songs, none of them are written by Gary Barlow.
Oh, wow.
Well, and that's the thing too, where like the movie sh I if the movie is to be trusted, it seems like the media pit those two together, where they're like, Gary hasn't seen Robbie in forever, song versus song. You know, that whole moment when they're in the recording studio. And Robbie's just not getting it, so then Gary has to go in when Robbie leaves to sing it, and everyone's praising him. It's like, okay, but like, did that really happen? Is that more like Robbie's interpretation of what happened in real life? Who knows?
It's also like, I feel like people, when you see like a boy band like that, you like to naturally think of them as all having like a very brotherly relationship, or like a really, gay relationship with each other, like a really like intense personal relationship. And not that the reality for a lot of those guys is probably just like, that's my coworker.
That I'm forced to hang around with for 300 days out of the year.
Like, I get along with them. They're not like my soulmate.
Right.
It's not somebody I'm destined to spend my life with, Not everybody is Lennon McCartney, where they were obviously very in love with each other, intensely so.
And then in
But
this
like,
one,
it's
when
just
they.
like, it would be like, our relationships with coworkers at like stage door, where we were
Yeah.
just forced to be around each other all the time. And it was like, this is fun and great sometimes, but also you kind of drive me insane sometimes. And I wish we could have a regular work environment where I could see you for 8 hours and
And
then
go
we,
away. And we go away from each other. Right.
And then it would be
No.
great.
Although it was interesting learning, because I feel like this is true, that they went through like the gay circuit with their or gay clubs with their songs.
That was actually really funny, like, to hear about that. And I was like, I guess that makes sense.
But like a
That's
lot
a
of
good way
people,
to.
a lot of disco people did that. I think Donna Summer did that.
It may it and I just never thought about it for like a 90s group. But I was like, yeah, I guess if you're starting to try like a pop group in the 90s, the club and the gay club in particular is a great place to start.
Right. A lot of the time, though, I was just like, does everyone hate each other, or are they just British? You know, like, is everyone really this villainous, or are they just British?
It's in their blood. They can't help it.
But the dad. I understand that family is complicated.
Yes. And you can absolutely have so much love for somebody who abused you.
Right. And that ending concert did happen. Like, everything happened in this movie in real life. You know, they may have taken some dramatic license with the amount of things. Like,
Or like moved the timing around,
move the
like shuffle the
timing
timing
around,
to be more
yeah.
narratively.
Because obviously, Take That did not sing Rock DJ. That's a Robbie Williams song.
But it was the best song for that moment.
Right, but I'm saying, I'm I'm
Right. Yeah,
underlining
that's right. That the
we're
chronology
playing with
doesn't line
time. Yeah. However, this dad,
up.
such an asshole. Like, he left to go to further his career, and he didn't go that far, but he still loves it. And you're just like, but do you?
Yeah. Yeah, I part of recovery, I do believe one of the steps is to forgive the people who have hurt you.
Yeah.
Because, you can't forgive yourself for your wrongs if you're not willing to forgive other people for their wrongs. But I am not Robbie Williams, and I don't have to forgive his father for anything.
You're right.
So
We're not Robbie Williams.
good for Robert if he and his father were able to work things out and he has a good view of his father. Good for him. I am not that person and I hate that father. He was horrible. And his stand-up was not that good.
Well, was he a stand? He was another singer.
He was
Or.
like he was doing like stand-up like kind of like he was like emceeing events. So he was like sprinkling
Okay.
in.
So he was sprinkling in his comedy as well as doing a song or two here and there.
Yeah.
But still, I was just like, why are we giving him this ending? Like, why is he getting a redemption arc? I thought this movie was about Robbie. And
Yeah,
like,
that felt very much like that was in the movie for Robbie. Like he needed that in the movie for himself. I don't know if I'm saying that the right way, but
no,
like
you
I
are
feel like.
you because this movie, I guess, is also a form of therapy, like for him to relive and rehash and be able to tell his story his way. Granted,
Yeah.
I feel like it's a little too soon because he's still like you said, he's still alive. He's
Right.
51.
Which I mean, so is Elton John and Rocket Man, but the end of Rocket Man is in the 80s.
Right. And well,
The
this
end of
one I
this
think is
movie is like the 2000s, mid thousands.
2000, two, yeah. Two
Which
between 2000 and 2010, I'll say.
I mean, it was 20 years ago.
Ugh.
Blech. But that's not that long. It to me it doesn't feel as long, I guess, because the ending of Rocket Man still occurred when I was not born yet.
Right.
So I'm like, well, that was so long ago. Whereas something that happened 20 years ago, I'm like, well, that was basically yesterday. Like, how can you have any rear view of that?
So I'm just reading his Wikipedia page, and in 2018, it was announced that Robbie Williams and Guy Chambers would write music and lyrics for the stage musical adaptation of David Walliams's children's book, The Boy in the Dress. The musical opened in November 2019. Huh. Where was this in the movie? I guess I need to read his entire Wikipedia page because, like,
Yeah.
he
Well, I
seems.
mean, I do think it's funny that like this whole movie takes place before he met his wife and love of his life. Like,
Right. Well, because presumably all of this is happening, like, all of the drugs and alcohol and
right.
depression and spiraling and all that happened prior to meeting the wife.
Right,
What
which
we
it
can assume, because we don't know him.
we don't know him, but it is also, that's kind of nice and romantic to think of like, well, she got to meet the best version of him, and she will always know the best version of him, which is kind of a sweet thing. And whether or not it's true, it might only be the thing that he hopes. He might
Right.
just hope that his wife only knows the best version of himself. But that's nice. Like, it's nice that he wants that too. I don't know. It's kind of sappy, but.
It's also a little sad that, like, to go back to Nicole, they had this relationship and she was kind of forced to have that abortion and everything, and then you see
Yeah.
him read the newspaper about how she welcomed their first kid with the guy from Oasis. I believe that's the guy from Oasis.
Yeah, it's Liam Gallagher, who I do know she was married to for a time, and they ended up divorced. And also, like, the Gallagher brothers are, like, not nice people.
Oh, no,
I'm
they're
not
kind of,
saying
they're also assholes in this.
I'm not saying they're bad. I'm not saying that they are altogether wrong, but they're assholes in this movie because they are antagonistic towards Robbie Williams, but also, like, in life, they're, you know, assholes. That's who they are.
But I mean more so, like, you know, she was able to have a child with him and not with Robbie. And then it's really sweet that, like, when he's going through and apologizing and talking, like, I felt like they had closure, at least according to the movie.
Yes. And again, even if that's just what Robbie wants to believe happened, it's nice that he wants to have had closure with her. And, like,
yeah,
that he knows that he's the one who has to apologize.
So do you think you're going to listen to some more Robbie Williams / Take That music after this? If you
Yeah,
haven't already?
Yeah. Yeah.
So the whole time, I was just like, where's Millennium? Why isn't Millennium in this movie? It's not that bad of a song. They even have a New Year's moment that they could have had it playing on a radio or something.
That's true.
How dare they?
How dare they? I'm going to be honest. After I watched this movie, I was like, I'm going to go home and listen to some Robbie Williams. And then I went to Spotify and only played the Better Man soundtrack. So, you know, mission accomplished.
Yeah, because in this movie, it's all songs he's done except for My Way and Land of a Thousand Dances.
Well, and She's the One, I believe, was also a cover, but, like,
yes,
he covered that for one of his albums.
But I don't think he's ever sung My Way on an album, is what I'm saying.
Oh, I don't know.
Nor, and like I said, Land of a Thousand Dances was for this movie. Hold on, I'm looking it up right now. Okay, so he did cover My Way in 2000. I will retract
Okay.
that. Oh, was it? This was the live at Royal Albert Hall. When
okay,
he
so
sang
the moment in the movie
is
that
real.
That the movie, okay.
Wow. So that happened in 2001.
Oh.
So where this movie is from, and it's interesting that we start when he's a kid. You know, there's no, like, my parents met, blah, 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 blah. No. He's a kid.
Yeah.
And then the dad leaves, and then he does Pirates of Penzance. Wow.
And he makes everybody laugh by being a cheeky little fellow. Oh, he's just a little bit cheeky.
But,
that's me being British.
So, I think, to go back to the chimpanzee of it all, I think there's, like, multiple reasons for this.
Okay.
Where he is the party animal character type. He is a party animal. But then also, I feel like it's like the inner beast or the inner demon that he... like you said, when you brought up Let Me Entertain You and he starts fighting his past selves, it feels like he's fighting his inner demons.
Yeah, it's also like that is terrifying because chimpanzees, adorable animals, really sweet, really, really cute, except not sweet. They're actually quite vicious. They're very vicious animals, which is why they are actually more dangerous for humans to be around than gorillas or orangutans because they are not as mellow and extremely territorial. And, like, it is kind of scary to see them, like, snarling at each other. And if you saw that same thing with a bunch of guys, you know, maybe it looks cool and maybe it just looks kind of silly because it's just a guy who looks like Robbie Williams fighting himself.
It's the slow buildup of him seeing them. And, like, I guess they're also could be representative of Robbie thinks he has imposter syndrome or something.
Yeah, and it's his past haunting him,
and so
all of his previous moments of insecurity creeping back to him until they build to the point where he breaks.
So, but prior to the fight that happens, they're just giving him menacing looks, and it is terrifying. It's interesting because it's all points we've seen in the movie. There is no, well, yeah. Or in his career that we can go back to.
Yeah, stuff that you can reference in video or photograph. Like, there's not a moment where it's like, well, they just made that up, or we're just relying on Robbie Williams' memory.
Like, we're not seeing super baby version of Robbie Williams.
Right.
In that fight scene.
Well, there's a little teeny one from when he was playing football with his mates. We do
but
see
I mean, like, there is no
one.
Swaddled up baby
right, yeah.
Stabs in the throat.
Right.
Like, him killing his child version is graphic enough.
Yeah.
And you know, like, it's all CGI, but still, part of you is just like, ah, oh, you're, wow.
Well, and I want to give a huge shout out to the special effects team on this, because it's really good CGI for it being a hairy animal that you're following for basically the entire movie. I think there are no scenes without him. And he's in most of the shots. It's a lot of work to make that work. And they did a great job tracking with the hair, and but also the eyes were so good. You really could look into those eyes, and they didn't feel dead. They didn't feel digital. And I need to applaud them for that.
I feel like they are his eyes.
Like
the color, at least.
Yeah. I would not be surprised to hear that they figured out some way to, like, track his real eyes or John O'Davies' real eyes with the CGI animal. Similar to what they did in, did you see Furiosa?
Yes.
Okay, so they had the young actress playing young Furiosa, and as she aged, they started digitally altering her eyes to look more and more like Anya Taylor-Joy's until she grew into Anya Taylor-Joy, and they did a great job with that. They might have done something similar with this, but, like, again, that could have gone so wrong. They could have taken so many lazy shortcuts, and it just looked scary or...
And
I honestly
feel like John O'Davies and the child actor, whose name I'm too lazy to look up at this moment, I feel like they actually did give them clothes to wear. Because there are points where I'm like, that's not CGI clothing. That's real clothing.
Yeah. Well, and they would have to, at the very least, they would have to, because there are a few times, like during Rock DJ, he's like actively taking clothes off and putting new clothes on.
Mm-hmm.
So they would have had to have given him something to actually reference in real life.
Right. But, like, also, and I know they can easily do this, but I feel like doing the folds in clothes, you know, in fabrics and everything is painstaking and takes forever. So,
and with a lot of movement, it is hard because you need to get the weight so perfect, or else it's going to look really wrong.
Right. And a lot of the scenes are a lot of the scenes, like, it's mostly the head and hands that they are CGI-ing to be the chimpanzee. Like, Rock DJ has a few moments around the movie, it's like a full body almost CGI. He's definitely shirtless at some points, or like towards the end when he pisses off his one friend I can't remember who, if that's a friend from childhood or something.
It's his friend from at least when he was a teenager. Because that's who he's talking to about joining the boy band. Like, when they're sitting up on the billboard, and they're talking about,
that's him.
Robbie's like, I'm gonna get out of here. Get out of this town. And his friend's like, I would be happy to, you know, get a steady job and settle down with a good woman and start a family.
Okay, that's who that is. But, like, there's that moment where Robbie's trying to suck the fat out of him or something. Whatever that fucking thing was. But you see the shoulder, like the exposed torso and arms and everything. So that's like a lot of CGI going on right there.
Yeah.
For that moment. But I feel like some scenes they were able to just do the face. You know, it's not like a full body. And even though it is CGI and you can tell it's CGI, it's not bad CGI.
No, it's very good.
It's still like, this isn't real. This is, you
No,
know, you're
they did
wearing, this is a
not
person
train
in
a
a,
chimpanzee.
well, like, I don't think they were trying to make him blend well into the world. I think they were keeping it a little bit fantastical.
Yeah, but I still think like, because I think the more important thing with that stuff is when people are interact, other actors are interacting with him, does it look like they are
Oh,
interacting with
yes.
an actor who is there? Instead of just, do they look like they are
A tennis
talking to
ball
a
and a
tennis
stick.
ball and a stick? Which they are very clearly talking to somebody there. So I think going mocap was absolutely the correct choice.
And I think being like, we're making a musical biopic with Robbie Williams being portrayed as a chimpanzee, it's like we're not going for realism with any of that.
Right. Well, it also like that's the type of thing where you could make it look as close to real as possible and it will never read as real because it just doesn't happen in real life. It's the same. It does not matter what you do to shoot, like to film a person who is flying. People don't fly in real life. There is no way you can make it look real because there's no reference for what it would look like real. So like, yes, we have real chimpanzees we can look at, but their proportions are different. They made him proportion to a human man.
But also, they're like, we're gonna do musical moments.
Right, yeah.
So already the rules of reality are out the window.
Right.
Because now you're busting out in a song, and everyone knows the song and dance, even though technically it's not written yet.
Right.
If we're following the chronology of the story of the actual story that's happening.
Right. And people are tripping over gumballs, but managing to land on beat. Like, they're doing fun musical things. So you could have an actual man in there doing it, and it's still not going to look entirely real just because of what he's doing.
Oh man, this movie was actually really good, and I'm
It's a
glad.
good movie. Listen,
Yeah.
I'm not saying it's the best movie ever made, but I'm also saying, have you considered it might be the best movie ever made?
Ooh, I don't
I
want to
mean,
say it's the best movie ever made. I want to say I had
it's
a.
not. It's not. I'm just saying, have you considered
Yeah, well, no, I have not considered it, but
it
I did consider it a fun time and an opportunity for me to want to learn more about people I don't know.
though? I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's a fun time and it will make you feel emotions that you were not expecting it to make you feel.
Honestly, that funeral. Oh my God.
And that the Angels, which
Angels.
that's a song I have heard of. I've never actually heard that song before. So for that to be my introduction to that song, wah, 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 wah.
Is there anything else though you want to talk about before we get into Sharp and Flat?
Rocket Man's a good movie too. I do think of Rocket Man a lot when I think of this movie.
Do.
I think this is kind of a little bit better, but I really like Rocket Man.
I did think of Rocket Man too, especially when like in Rocket Man when he sings Crocodile Rock and everyone starts flying. I was like, okay, like
Yeah.
that's similar vibes happening in here. There's other musical moment mu musical fantasy moments in both of them, but I think they're both very entertaining in this on the same level. How's that?
Yeah.
All right.
And I think they're similar too because they are addiction stories about musicians who are still alive that also feel like this is part of their process.
British musicians.
British musicians, and I'm pretty sure like Robbie Williams and Elton John are like, if not friends, then at least friendly with each other in real
Oh
life.
yeah, you know.
That mean this is a small industry. This is a small island they live on.
Everyone knows everyone in England, right?
Yeah, it's the same village. They all live in the same village.
All right, let's get into Strapping Flat, shall we?
Yes, I'm doing a thumbs up. Yes.
Sharp Flat.
So in this section, we're going to highlight some moments, whether or not we talked about it. If we liked it, it's sharp. And if we didn't like it, I thought it could change, it's flat. I want to start with flats because my flats center around the dad. Which I feel like we are supposed to not like him according to the movie.
Yeah. I think per the movie, it's not really important what we think of him. It's important what Robbie thinks of him.
Right. And I feel like in this movie.
But I hate him.
Yeah. I feel like in this movie, there is no real antagonist besides Robbie's inner demons. But I'm going to say the dad's a fan antagonist.
Yeah, I mean, the demons started somewhere.
Right.
The insecurity started somewhere.
So, Dad. First of all. Just a flat for the dad.
Yeah. What's his Peter Conway / Peter Williams.
Yes. I'm also flatting Peter calling Robbie youth. It just felt weird. Like, I would understand if, like, he was Robert and it's like a junior situation.
Yeah.
You know.
I just have to assume that the real Peter Williams called Robbie Williams youth all the time.
Right. Well, no, I understand that, but I just
yeah.
It was like, why?
His name's Robert. Call him Robert.
Or Robbie. Call him Robbie and be like, my dad calls me Robbie. Great, that's your boy band name. And then my last flat is just for the ending, where it's like like I said, the dad doesn't deserve, in my opinion, the dad did not deserve this.
Yeah. I'm gonna halfway agree with you on that because I think it only really works as like, it does not work as a good redemption moment for the dad or a good like triumphant moment for the dad. It works as a good triumphant moment for Robbie because it's like what's triumphant about it is that Robbie is able to let go of his past resentments and his past anger. His dad does not deserve that great moment.
No.
But Robbie deserves to celebrate the fact that he's able to let go of those demons.
See, when he was like acknowledging his mom and everything, and then he didn't do his dad, I was just like, yes, queen! Go off, sis! And then he was like, and now I want to call my dad up to stage. And I went, fuck, no!
I mean, I agree, and also I'm like, but I get it.
Right.
I agree with you, but also I get it.
Do you have any other flats?
It's hard with this kind of thing because it is a biopic and it is about someone's factual life. And we talked about, you know, they fudge some of the details and some of the chronology, but all of the things that happen in this movie happened in real life with a human man.
Right.
And not a chimpanzee.
I mean, that's why I really only flatted the dad because I'm like, this feels romanticized in a way, but also like it's a pretty solid movie. Like,
yeah, it is. Like the only thing, like narratively, is so that friend you were talking about, his childhood, well, at least adolescence. It does say on the Wikipedia that there is a younger actor credited as that same guy, but the young version. His name is Nate. It says
Nate,
Fraser Hadfield as Nate and Latham Blissand as young Nate. So I guess he does show up as a kid at some point. We just didn't realize that he was called the same name.
Unless is young Nate supposed to be the one that's on the billboard or whatever they're on talking about?
No, I think that's the same guy. I'm pretty sure it's the same guy.
Okay.
If not, they did a great job matching actors. I loved that they had that friend who he can talk to before he's famous and then talk to as he's hitting rock bottom. It would have been nice to kind of fold that friend into more of the narrative along the way, like between those two scenes, like to see him, you know, still keeping in touch with Robbie as he starts to get more famous and then Robbie start to drift away more and then lean on him more when he needs something out of him. Like, it would have been interesting to see more of that relationship throughout the years to really drive that home better. I think it would have made the fact that it's that friend saying all of those things to him hit harder if it's somebody that we, the audience, had more of a relationship to.
Right.
But again, you know, we're basing this off of a real person's life. We don't know how much they actually kept in touch, or, you know, maybe that's something that they did have in an earlier draft. And then they thought, well, this is, you know, sort of killing the flow of everything else, so we'll excise that. But I would have liked to have seen it. It would have been funny to see more of like his weird rivalry with the Gallagher brothers, because that's funny. It's very funny in real life. And it's very funny what they do show in the movie.
I just found out who played young Robbie, and it was two people.
Okay.
Carter J. Murphy and Asmara Feek, if I'm pronouncing her last name correctly. Yes.
So is that mocap actor and vocal actor? Or?
They just, according to the IMDb, it just says young Robbie for both of them.
Okay.
It doesn't say one is the person and one is the voice. I'm also not sure if one is like maybe like was a little older than young.
Or could do more of the more athletic things.
Or that, yeah. Or like, one did Pirates of Penzance and one did the My Way opening.
Yeah. I am looking here on Wikipedia under cast. It doesn't. The only young Robbie they have here is Carter J. Murphy as the voice of young Robbie. It says nothing about the mocap for young Robbie.
Fascinating.
Yeah. But it's the Wikipedia. So they only cast like top billed.
Right.
They only list top billed. So that is interesting. That's interesting.
Okay. Sharps. Or yeah. Do you have more flats?
I'm flatting Robbie Williams in real life for not visiting his gran when she was sick. How dare you, Robbie? Robert.
You're going to make me cry.
Sorry. That it was
beautiful.
It was beautiful, and it upset me so much that he didn't see her before she died.
Right.
But like, things like that happen in real life, and it is upsetting, but it happens.
Yeah. Okay. So, Sharp, speaking of, I'm sharping Betty, Robbie's nan.
Hell yeah. Nan, not gran, sorry.
Because the mom, fine. She has some moments where I'm like, I don't really like you that much, but the nan, oh my God. I almost started crying when it was the bathtub scene. That you sent me that gif or meme or something of just her saying you're enough. And it's like, oh my God, this is beautiful.
I absolutely loved her too. I will, Janet Williams is the mother. And you know, she was doing a lot. She was doing a lot. She was being torn a lot of ways. But Nan was really, at least per the movie, the supportive figure.
Wait. I'm not seeing. Oh, Janet Williams, the dad, the mom.
Yeah,
got it, got it. Sorry,
yeah,
sorry,
yeah.
Sorry. I thought you were talking the actors' names, and I was just.
Oh,
like...
Oh no, Kate Mulvaney played her.
Kate Mulvaney played her, and then Allison Steadman played Betty Williams.
Yeah,
which good for her. I'm also sharping the horny girl pirate, just because when that moment happened, I was just like, oh my God, how old are we supposed to be at this point? I'm sharping the montage of the Take That introduction when we're meeting the people, and they're giving like their past professions and everything. They're quote unquote real backstories.
Yeah.
I'm also sharping the rock DJ sequence, sharp to the underwater sequence as well. It's an oddly beautiful depiction of depression and spiraling. It's interesting how they're showing mental health in this movie. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. I think they do a really excellent job of visualizing it without coming off trite.
Because even in the movie, there's the voiceover of Robbie Williams saying, like, I guess I had depression.
Yeah.
But like you said, it's the 90s. Nobody really knew about it. Nobody really, right, like, cared as much about mental health in the 90s as they do today.
Right.
And then my last sharp is just for the editing. Like, I don't know how else to just describe it besides saying it's perfection.
Yeah. Edited by Jeff Groth, Spencer Susser, Martin Connor, Lee Smith, Patrick Coral. You all did your thing.
Right. There, because like, I still don't know how movies are done.
It's
a you know
lot.
What I mean. But
No,
like,
it genuinely, movies are magic. It is a miracle every time a movie gets made.
And then like, movies like this, where there's a lot of CGI involved. Okay, so think about the underwater sequence, right? I don't know who actually edited that, if it was the people doing the CGI or if it was the one of the names that you listed. So for like that moment, everyone gets a sharp. I don't know who. There's like the one moment that was beautiful was Angels, that I actually made a note of, like, this editing is perfection.
God, the way like it shifts the crowd to the Nan's funeral, to just being the people at the funeral, to being Nicole, and really showing how all of those things are the fame and the pressure and his personal relationships and the guilt over his Nan and the grief over her, all compounding so well, and just doing that just through like really good editing. So not all those people I just named, not all of them have a blue Wikipedia name.
Okay.
But Lee Smith, I'm clicking on his name. He does a lot of work with Christopher Nolan. Spencer Susser. Oh, I don't recognize any of the, I have not seen any of these movies, I don't think. That's interesting. I might have to look more into his career. He also seems to be a bit younger. He's like 10 years older than us. That's young.
Yeah.
And then Jeff Groth worked on The Hangover. He does a lot of TV. He's done work on Community. And he was Oscar nominated for Joker. So a talented group.
I'm looking at Patrick Carell. He is actually a producer on this movie as well. He's a co-producer.
Oh, okay.
And this is his only editing credit.
Oh, interesting. I wonder if that means, I'm not going to assume what that means.
No. Well,
but that's very interesting.
We know sometimes, because we've seen movies or heard interviews of people being like, of a producer having to step in to direct or something like that, because
yeah, but,
one thing or
you know,
another.
Approving a certain cut or something. If you do enough work approving cuts, it might get you a credit, you know?
And I also don't know any of the movies that Martin Connor edited. Oh, he did The Railway Men. The Railway Man.
Okay, I've not seen it, but I've heard of it.
I've heard of that one too, but he's worked a lot, looks like. Shady, what are your sharps?
So going along with that, because it's not really the same, but it feels like along the same vein, I'm going to sharp Eric Wilson's work as the cinematographer. It's really difficult to light a movie that does have strong CGI and strong production elements in it. And you can see that in a lot of very major Hollywood movies that have great crews. But there's a lot of post-production elements and things don't look like they're lit properly in the end, because it's really hard to light for CGI.
Right.
Because you're lighting for something that's not there. plainly.
That's something that's going to be there.
Right.
But right now it's a mocap suit or a tennis ball on a stick.
Right. So like, obviously we're doing a mocap suit, so that gives you at least a reference for how to light it, but it also doesn't tell you the bounce that you're going to need or how it's going to necessarily integrate with the rest of the scene that's full of natural elements that are actually on set. So I think this movie looks beautiful. I think it's one of the best looking movies I've seen in a few, with this much CGI in it. It's one of the best looking movies I've seen in the past couple of years. Every other movie I can think of that looks as good or better than this is like a movie that relied very little on post-production.
Mm-hmm.
So I think he did a fantastic job. And you know, the last episode I did for this was West Side Story, where it feels like the camera really is part of the choreography. This maybe not as far as that, but it does feel like, especially that rock DJ sequence, the camera is moving so well with everybody.
The spiral zoom out during Let Me Entertain You at the beginning of it, like,
Oh, so good. So good. Also, Robbie Williams did that upside down entrance in real life.
he
That's
did, yes.
crazy. What a crazy man. He had to have been on drugs at that point.
Oh my God, yes. There's a moment too where I don't remember if we actually saw it or if it was like a on a video screen or something, where he's at some sort of award show wearing like all pleather and singing with is it like Tony Randall or Paul Anka or something, like some crooner, that all happened. And if you see the video or the images, like, he is on stuff at that point as well. So.
It's Robbie Williams, a real character in real life. That's another reason why this movie works, despite him not being, a Paul McCartney like level talent. It really works because he is such an interesting person and such a fun person. So, I guess sharp for Robbie Williams being a fun person in real life.
I mean,
Glad you worked on yourself, bro.
it's so fascinating that Michael Gracey did two movies about showmen. I wonder what.
Because Greatest Showman was his first feature-length film, right? And this is his follow-up. That's actually kind of nuts for this to be your second feature-length movie.
You
That's
want to
kind
know
of
what's
nuts.
really interesting
What's that?
that I just saw? He was a producer on Rocket Man.
It's all coming together.
So he directed The Greatest Showman. He's also directed a lot of music videos. So that comes through a lot in both this and Greatest Showman, where like the music video of it all. Of the scenes look fantastic. But yeah, he was a producer on Rocket Man in 2019, and then he did a couple of other music videos, and then he did Better Man.
Per Wikipedia, it says that he was originally attached to direct Rocket Man before being replaced by Dexter Fletcher. Interesting.
Sorry, he's an executive producer. Let me get the title correct.
Oh, he was also an executive producer on Ladybug and Cat Noir, the movie. My 6-year-old niece will love knowing that factoid. He also wrote song lyrics for it. That's great. That's great.
I kind of want to see what he does next, you
I
know?
do too.
Like, I'm intrigued to see what historical, because out of the two feature-length films, he's doing Historical Showman. So who was
Yes,
next?
one with a little bit less of a tether to reality than the other. And it's not the one with the chimpanzee in the center.
Surprisingly.
Surprisingly. I'm going to be honest, I don't remember your opinion on Greatest Showman. I hate that movie. I loathe that movie. But I do think a lot of what I dislike about that movie is still on display with Better Man, but pulled, like, restrained more or directed in a better way. So big sharp to Michael Gracey for, to me, a huge improvement in direction between movies.
Well, yeah,
For
'cause
me personally, I know a lot of people love Greatest Showman,
I
so I
did
won't talk too much.
I liked the music videos. I didn't like the book scenes basically, because if I remember what I said correctly, it's because they messed with history so much.
They may as well have just made up a guy. It didn't need to be Barnum. It could have been any made-up man.
Right. So, but like,
That's a different podcast, though.
honestly, like, this is me, and from now on, like, those songs fuck so hard, and the filming of it was beautifully done. But anyway, any other sharps, any other flats, any naturals?
Oh, I just, ooh, what was the other sharp? Thank you for sharp for reminding me of All Saints, Never Ever. That song is a bop. I'm trying to, I just had to sharpen my head and I can't remember what it is. This is horrible.
Welcome
this
to podcasting.
Horrible. Welcome to podcasting.
And at 3 a.m., I'm going to get a text from you saying, this is the sharp.
Yeah. Man, I'm going, oh, you know what? I will sharp, even though I mentioned it before, I do want to put a sharp on that scene at the end of Let Me Entertain You when it shifts into his actual suicide attempt. And I think it's so difficult to sensitively film a suicide attempt. Mm-hmm. It's really hard because it's extremely triggering in a way that's extremely harmful for a lot of people. But you also want the people who don't have a personal experience to understand. So you can't do it completely figuratively and you can't do it completely literally. I think this did a really great job of not showing the act itself, but showing the exact consequences of it, the immediate consequences of it. And it was chilling in a really great way. It's a horribly sad moment. It's a horribly terrifying moment. Especially if you have, you know, if you know anybody who has attempted or successfully carried it out, or if you yourself have had ideation in the past, it's terrifying. But it's also done really well where it's not like, okay, now you're giving me directions on how to do it. So thank you for that.
That whole sequence also made me wonder what actually happened at Nebworth.
Like, I mean, as far as I have seen, like, he had a great performance at Nebworth.
Right. Like,
he just had a great performance. And well, I guess he was just battling his younger self in his mind while he was doing it.
While he was singing, yeah.
Drugs are a hell of a drug, I'll tell you that.
Would you add any of the songs to your life's playlist?
Rock DJ is there. I listen to Rock DJ on repeat when I go grocery shopping.
From this album, or you mean, yeah, like...
Oh, from this album. I mean, the original too, I will listen to, but I love the album version. I love how full it is, especially near the end. That was the sharp that I missed.
Rock DJ?
So we talked about Rock DJ. I want to specifically sharp that they put a sequence in the piano store, because I think that was a really fun place to have a dance sequence. So whose ever choice that was, great choice.
So I wrote down Rock DJ, Come Undone, Angels, Better Man, and My Way.
Yeah.
Although,
if
I was going to have My Way, I want Robbie singing it. I don't want Peter.
Like I said, I listened to the soundtrack immediately after seeing this movie, and it's been pretty heavy in my rotation since. Like, the whole thing, basically. So I might say the whole
Is
the
Land
whole
of a
soundtrack.
Thousand Dances on there?
It is, yeah.
Okay.
And that's kind of fun because it's mixed the same way as it is in the movie, where it sounds like a very raw studio recording. It's kind of fun.
Interesting.
I mean, generally, if I'm listening to Land of a Thousand Dances, I'm going to listen to a different version. Probably not Robbie Woods. Yeah, like, I'm probably going to listen to Wilson Pickett. That's the name I'm looking for.
Oh, so Wilson Pickett is the one that is known for covering it.
Yes. I'm not. It's one of those songs that I know has been covered 100 times. I don't really know what the original one is, and I'm not going to look it up.
So it was originally written by Chris Kenner in 1962, and then it became a bigger hit with The Cannibal and the Headhunters and Wilson Pickett.
I know that version too. Wilson Pickett is the one I listen to more often. You can cut all that out. This is not a podcast about Land of a Thousand Dances.
And on that note, Shady, we're done with the episode.
Oh my gosh.
We did Better Man. What do you have to plug or promote?
Listen to the podcast that I did with my sister. It is basically over, but it's still there. You could still listen to it. It's called I Love the 90s. And it's about how we love a little show that VH1 used to have called I Love the 90s. And you know, that's it. Oh, and the podcast I used to do with John, Movie Deja Vu, which I still think is a brilliant name, and I'm going to revive it someday. Not today.
Not today. No, we're
busy.
we're busy. And then usually you have to plug your other thing, plug your Twitter and stuff. Come on, come on.
Oh, right. I'm so sorry. If you want to follow me on Twitter or Instagram, you can find me at either of those platforms at Cookie O Shady.
So, what kind of dessert are you cooking?
You could call me Cookie.
What dessert are you today, Shady?
I'm banana pudding
Good one.
because chimpanzee,
Yeah.
but like a British pudding, but bananas. Because
Oh.
aren't puddings a British thing too?
I mean, yeah, but like happy banana pudding. Like,
Banana pudding.
yeah. Yeah.
What dessert are you, John? I'm just curious.
Animal crackers.
There we go.
And if you want to talk more about Better Man, or if you have a Robbie Williams album to suggest that we listen to, you can reach out to me. You can email me at buttersungpod@gmail.com, also on Facebook, Instagram, and Threads at buttersungpod. Did you also cry during Angels? Please let me know, because it is a very emotional moment, and I have personal ties like similar to this, but
It's also just a good song too.
it's also just a great song.
Like even divorced from what it is in the movie, it's a great song.
And if you want to be part of the next episode's conversation, well, it's episode 450, everyone. So you know what that means. It's a milestone episode. And we will be doing something very special. Stay tuned for news, but we will be discussing On with the Show, a 1929 film. Sadie, thank you so much for coming back on and for introducing this movie to me, kind
Well,
of.
thank you for having me, and I'm really glad you liked this movie. I always get scared that people are not gonna like that, especially you, because you're John, and I need
Yeah,
you to like all of the movies that I suggest to you.
other guests have famously picked stuff that I hate, and now it's my reputation to them to be like, "Do you hate this
I
one?" I'm
don't
looking
think
at you, Mark.
So far, I feel like I've lucked out. Everything I've suggested that was new to you, you ended up liking or thinking was as bad as I thought it was.
Or somewhere in the middle.
Right.
I feel like.
But like I will purposely give you bad movies because I want you to see the bad movie.
Superman. But
But
that
like
was
this,
campy bad. Like
yeah,
campy
that
fun
was,
bad.
yeah. Or what was that country crush?
Oh
Terrible.
Jesus, I blacked that one out.
Yeah, but I needed you to enjoy the madness with me. But this, I was like, oh, I really hope John thinks it's good. I
No,
really hope John thinks it's good.
I did enjoy it. Yeah. It
Good.
was I mean, at first, when you see it's 2 hours and 15 minutes, you're like, fuck you, movie. But then you watch it and you're like, I think I need more.
Yeah, no, it moves. This
Yeah.
movie moves.
Like Jagger. Anyway, everyone, thank you for listening and bye for now.
Special thanks to Aaron Troy for creating the pod's artwork and to Nick Bombacino for composing the theme song and the jingles. A huge thank you to CastBox for hosting this podcast. And thank you again for tuning in to today's episode of Life's But a Song. Bye for now, everyone, and have a musical day.